The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome to the Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. Of course, the show brought to you by PartyPoker.net. Chris, over the phone today, enjoying his weekend up north. I have to enjoy the weekend here at the station, unfortunately. Not as good as getting to hang out up north. Unfortunately, the weather hasn't been cooperating too great. It's still a little bit chilly, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, it's a little bit chilly, but, you know, it's still not a bad place to be, Rob. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to people like yourself that have to have jobs.
Yes, but I love my job, so I can't really complain about that. I enjoy speaking with you every week about the poker world. I definitely love doing this show. Lots to get to on this program. We'll speak with Elia Lezra later in the show, find out what's going on in his world, and we'll also hear an interview that I got to do earlier in the week with Guy Laliberté, the founder of Cirque du Soleil, and of course the chair of One Drop, and of course they got the big one for One Drop coming up at the World Series of Poker, so you'll get to hear about that later in the show. But of course, Chris, we must start with the news that came out earlier in the week. Obviously, the Bernard Tapie Group's bid to buy the assets of Full Tilt Poker fell through, and now PokerStars is reportedly looking to buy the assets from the U.S. Department of Justice. And does this sort of come out of left field for you? I mean, it's really kind of an interesting turn of events. There's reports out there that it's up for $750 million, and obviously it's good news for all those people that had their money in Full Tilt because they may finally be able to get their money back, but it seems like another crazy twist and such a crazy story to begin with.
Well, it really was quite a story, and sort of the chronology was really interesting, and as you mentioned, first off, nobody that I knew this was coming, and the 24 hours that immediately followed this rumor breaking was, you know, I spoke with Lance Bradley from Bluff Magazine. I virtually called every poker journalist that I knew, and you know, I had many poker journalists calling me. Well, we all tried to track down a legitimate source for this story to find out whether or not it was true. And what happened was, it seemed to be that everyone was saying yeah, but nobody had anything concrete or anything solid on it. So it really did come out of left field for everybody. But what happened basically was the Bernard Tapie Group's attempt to buy Full Tilt was, you know, just basically came to a close. What was interesting was word came out of some of the offers that they had made to purchase, especially the early ones, which were really, really almost offensive in the way that they wanted to treat the players who had money still on deposit at Full Tilt. You know, essentially asking for players as part of the deal, they wanted players to have to play through their money. They wanted to deduct $100 a month from their accounts for not playing, and it was just almost stealing the money for themselves, which would be the second time that all that money was stolen. So that was the start of it, and then all of a sudden, out of left field, came this story that PokerStars was going to buy it. And to be fair, this has not actually ever been confirmed by anybody yet.
Right.
PokerStars has not said yes or no. Eric Hallreiser, the director of communications for PokerStars, made a statement saying that they weren't going to make a statement. You know, so it's been one of those kind of weeks. But we phoned everybody at every level. I called Daniel Negreanu. Well, contacted him while he was playing in the Super High Roller in Monaco to ask him if he knew anything. And his answer to me was he didn't know anything more than anyone else did. So it was really a strange and, you know, mysterious sort of series of rumors that just everyone was looking for confirmation. But it appears now that it's concrete, and I don't know what that's based on, but everybody seems to believe that it's going to happen. Details are non-existent. The big question is, will players get their money back? We don't know. The question is, you know, also is, does this involve some sort of amnesty for Issei Scheinberg, the CEO, the owner of PokerStars, to get him out of his problems in the U.S.? The answer is we don't know. So really, we don't know anything, but sounds like a really cool rumor.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, the rumor mill definitely heating up with this. And that was actually going to be my next question to you. I mean, the fact that this may eventually work out, it's pretty much like a pardon almost for Issei Scheinberg and these guys at PokerStars. I mean, to you, is that fair that they, you know, they spend all this money to buy the assets to get Full Tilt Poker? Let's say they pay everybody back. I mean, is that a fair trade for them to get off from all these accusations and the charges that the DOJ has laid on them, in effect, for just, you know, buying out Full Tilt Poker and giving people back their money? Is that a fair trade, do you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we don't know that that's any part of the deal.
Right. There's just reports. But
I tried to call the DOJ. The DOJ obviously not making any comments on it. I contacted a couple of legal experts, both in criminal and gaming law in the U.S., to ask them their thoughts on it. And I was told by both of them that, you know, they would be very surprised to see the Department of Justice walk away from money laundering indictments, that was not something that they were likely to do. You know, the Wire Act stuff, the unlawful gaming kind of thing, you know, everybody seems to have already acknowledged that that's going to be, you know, that's going to be made to go away over time. But the money laundering thing is a whole different ballgame. And they seem to think that they would be at least fairly surprised if they walked away from the money laundering charges. So I don't know what the deal is with that. Maybe it's the type of thing where Issei Scheinberg pleads guilty in absentia to the charges, resigns from PokerStars, and that sort of clears the decks for PokerStars to pay their fines or whatever else, and make themselves part of this deal to buy Full Tilt. But I just don't know. But, you know, the people that I spoke to seem to think you can't make money laundering and bank fraud charges go away that easily.
Now, I guess one of the other questions here, Chris, I mean, we've already talked about, you know, maybe the potential details about this, but I guess one of the questions I need to ask is, why would PokerStars do this?
Yeah, and you know what? That was the question that I kept asking. And we, you know, as I said, it was an interesting day, that 24 hours, sort of reminiscent in its own way of Black Friday, where, you know, we were all speaking to each other and trying to figure out what was going on. And, the thought is, what is the upside of this for PokerStars to buy it? Now, you can take out the fact that the software, the Full Tilt software, has a definitive value that's somewhere believed to be in the $130 to $150 million range. Their software platform was very good, and it was always going to be an asset that people would want. So aside from that, you know, a vast majority of Full Tilt's players and a vast majority of the money on Full Tilt was U.S. facing. So I don't understand why people would, you know, why PokerStars would want to get their hands on that, because they really weren't going to get anything definitive out of it, because you couldn't play in the U.S. So then you get to the question is, well, is this a PR move? Well, as a PR move, that's, if the reputed sale amount is $800 million, then that's a $650 million PR move.
Yeah.
Which is pretty significant. Now, the other thought that crossed my mind is there some value in this, in that they don't have to face a competitor if someone else buys it and starts to operate it as a rest of the world company, that's someone that they don't have to face. If Bernard Tapie Group had ended up purchasing it and turned it, you know, and started operating in Europe, would that cut into Star's business there? Well, sure, to a certain extent. But again, you know, $800 million, $650 million, a little bit questionable. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to say one thing is that, you know, as a business decision, if this is true, we don't have any of the facts on it, but it did seem a little suspect as far as a deal. And that's why I was skeptical for that 24-hour period. I kept saying, you know, I'm not entirely sure this is true because I can't make sense of it.
Well, we'll continue to keep our eye on it, because business may be picking up very soon. I know I was mentioning to you before off the air, funny enough, a bunch of poker websites have picked up on it, but there's this YouTube channel called Big Think, and basically they get a bunch of experts from all over the world to chat about, you know, certain things, whether it's science or business. And funny enough, they uploaded a video earlier in the week. It was Howard Lederer. I don't know how old the video is, but they uploaded it last week, and it's him talking about business ethics. And in the video, he's mentioning things about how to, you know, repay loans and just being honest and all these things. And I mean, the irony is just overflowing in this video. It's kind of ridiculous. And I recommend people go to YouTube and check out this video because, you just have a laugh at it. It's pretty much pretty much ridiculous what he says in there and everything that has gone on since, obviously, with Full Tilt. Let's move on to some other things, Chris. I know on Twitter you had a discussion with a couple of poker journalists about Triple Crown in poker. We know in golf there's the Grand Slam, and same with in tennis as well. But when it comes to poker, what is the Triple Crown?
Well, that was what the debate was all about. I personally believe that a Triple Crown in poker would be a World Series of Poker bracelet, a WPT title, and an EPT title, all in open events. I think that would constitute a Triple Crown. There was a lot of debate about that. We actually had a pretty spirited debate with some journalists about it as to, why not the Latin American Poker Tour? Why not the Asian Pacific Poker Tour? Why not, any of these other Heartland Poker Tours or anything else? But the truth of the matter is WSOP is the top of the heap. Next to the WSOP is the World Poker Tour, and then after that, the EPT. And then everyone after that seems to be more of in the minor league category. So I think if you're looking at that, and then you're looking at open events was another key part of it. Can't be an invitational, can't be a celebrity pro-am or anything like that. It would have to be an open event where anybody could play. And the field sizes and the buy-ins probably a certain factor in the prestige of like the World Poker Tour and the World Series of Poker. So I think that would be the Triple Crown, and I think that's sort of the consensus that we came to because it's quite an achievement. The players that have the ability to win on all three tours, you're looking at a pretty elite list of poker players that have those capabilities.
Yeah,
name is not on it, by the way. In case you were going to jump in, I know you're very solid at your research. I can save you the time. I am not a Triple Crown winner.
I looked it up. I already looked it up. I saw it, Chris. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm not even a single crown winner, Rob, to be honest with you.
Maybe one day, Chris. Maybe one day, and we will continue to talk about it on this program. I'm sure show after show after show. It'll be on your resume, and you'll bring it up every program. You mentioned Daniel Legranu over in Europe playing in the big high roller tournament there, and a bunch of pros are over in Europe. It's the European Poker Tour Grand Final main event at the Monte Carlo Casino. And I've always wondered this question because, we see the different personalities that poker players have, whether, they're North American or Latin American or from Europe. And we see it in all different sports. I mean, it's just different cultures and that's the way it is. But when it comes to poker playing, do you find that there's different styles when it comes to say North American and European players?
It's an interesting question. I think that used to be more true. I've played in Monaco. I've played in Monte Carlo at the big events there, and I've played in the Latin American Poker Tour. So I've been around a bit within those events, and there used to be more of a you could sort of make some broad assumptions on certain types of players. French players were probably going to chase their draws, their flush and their straight draws, and gamble a little bit. The Eastern Europeans, not to quote Phil Hellmuth and start getting into the idiots from Northern Europe, but Eastern Europeans were probably going to be aggressive. Northern Europeans, again, a little on the aggressive side. But I think now with online poker, so many people play online that you're seeing sort of a flattening out of the dialect, if you will, that people are getting more on the same page. There's so much good information out there about styles of plays, about approaches and strategies, that I think people are getting more into that ballpark. And only at the lower levels of poker, the mid levels of poker, the more sort of novice players or semi-pros, do you see that fall back to styles that go with certain areas. And we've tried for a long time to figure out what the Canadian style was.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting question. Canadians have been very successful out there in the world playing poker. And I did a magazine story on it once a few years ago and talked to a whole bunch of Canadian pros. And I think Daniel actually came up with the best concept of it. And Daniel said, it's not that there's a Canadian style, but Canadians are very polite and very social at the tables. And that social, that talking to people and being friendly is a big bonus if you can do it. It's disarming, but it also allows you to paint profiles of the people at the table that you're playing with because you're talking to them and you're finding out about them. So I don't even know if there's a Canadian style, but hey, we're friendly and it seems to work.
Yeah, it definitely does seem to work. Speaking of Canadians, coming up next year on The Poker Show, you'll hear my conversation with Guy Laliberté, the founder of Cirque du Soleil and the chair of One Drop Foundation. We'll talk about the big one for One Drop coming up at the WSOP. That's next on The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers and earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package. Play for free at PartyPoker.net to see if you've got what it takes to get to Vegas. Qualify now at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris Tessero. And of course, the World Series of Poker gets underway in a month's time. But coming up on July the 1st, there will be a three-day tournament, the big one for One Drop, the charity tournament put together by Guy Laliberté, the founder of Cirque du Soleil and the chair for One Drop. I had a chance to speak with him earlier in the week about the charity and the actual tournament itself. Pleased to be speaking with the founder of Cirque du Soleil and the chair for One Drop, Guy Laliberté. First off, Guy, thanks for doing this, and let's chat a little bit about the One Drop Foundation. And I guess for those that don't know what it is, I mean, you guys basically go around the world and try to raise awareness just of how important this resource is. I mean, I think for a lot of us here in North America, we really take water for granted, but obviously in third world countries, it is such a vital resource for them, and you guys help raise awareness around the world on the issue of water and just how important of a role it plays in the world, and especially in third world countries. And of course, you guys help raise money as well to try and support countries that are in desperate need of water. I mean, just tell us a little bit about One Drop Foundation.
Well, I think you covered it pretty good. One Drop Foundation was put in place in 2007. While I was reflecting to engage myself and Cirque du Soleil for the next 25 years in a humanitarian cause, I was reflecting about which cause I will take, and very soon I got inspired by the fact that water is a source of life. So as an artist, that was inspiration was important. But what was most important for me to engage myself in regard of water was the fact that one person every 20 seconds somewhere in the world is dying of not having access to clean water. This is the biggest cause of death around the world. So that was enough for me. Since then, I kind of made my classwork and learn about the subject a little more, and I was pretty surprised how deep and how important the cause of water was in regard of humanitarian cause in the world. If you take the situation of women, education, health, wealth, biodiversity, pollution, water is always at the center of all those humanitarian causes. And then for me, it became so clear that if you address, and we, as a global community, the situation of water, then you give a better chance to solve all of those other problems. That being said, as we speak today now, and I'm very happy about that, it's starting to be recognized worldwide by our government, biggest association, that water has become the most important subject to address within the next 25 years. If we don't do so, we probably will be facing the biggest crisis humankind would have faced in this history, and the clock is ticking. So this is where we nurture a mission, which is basically helping people having access to clean water by doing some field project in needed environment and countries. Second thing, create awareness and educating developed country people about the fact that water is a unique resource. It doesn't reproduce itself. It's the same water that we have today that the dinosaur had it millions of years ago. unfortunately, it's not as clean that it was before. And the third aspect is really trying to create a ripple effect, around the world in terms of awareness in regard to water. You know, it's a movement behind, there's a movement behind One Drop, and hopefully we'll be able to touch people and making them understand how important it is to take care of that resource.
Yeah, definitely is a great initiative. Of course, you know, all the money that you've been able to raise over the years for the foundation and the money that you've contributed for yourself has definitely gone a long way in these last 5 years. But let's talk about July 1st, coming up on Canada Day at the World Series of Poker. We know how big poker is in your life. I mean, we've seen you on TV, World Poker Tour, High Stakes Poker, Poker After Dark. But the big one for One Drop coming up at the World Series of Poker, the $1 million buy-in, 11.1% of the prize pool will be donated to One Drop Foundation. I mean, how did this all come about? I mean, it's the biggest prize pool ever, Guy. I mean, it's quite an amazing thing that you're putting together coming up at the WSOP.
Yeah, well, this idea came long many years ago when I was starting to reflect how could we, in original way, create an event that will raise money on one side, but also will have the double impact of touching and reaching certain community. And being part of that poker community, which I understand is very large and it's worldwide, I went to Mitch Garber, which is a personal friend. I threw him the idea saying, what about trying to see if we could do such an event? And he grabbed the idea and said, let's check it out. So the beginning of last year, we kind of gave some phone calls to a couple of our friends, and we have sufficient commitment to say and to make the decision, okay, let's give it a try. So we announced this event last year during the WSOP, and as we speak now, there's 31 confirmed player with a list of about 40 other potential players that had shown interest. So by reaching 31, we already know this is a huge success. It's already created the biggest purse, going over the Jamie Gold 12-point-something million a couple of years ago. But not only the money, because, of course, this is very, very good for One Drop in terms of raising money, but I think the double impact on it is we're reaching a community of great people. You know, I've been playing poker with many different people around the world, and this is a community of people that are open, are fundamentally very generous, and through social network media, through direct contact, there's a movement getting in place there, and awareness, and I'm very, very happy about that, because we, parallel to this event, we're launching a campaign called All In for One Drop, which some poker player engaged himself of giving back some of their earning on their yearly base. We already have pros that commit to that campaign. Daniel Neger New, Jonathan Duhamel, Al Key, Tony G, Eric Siddell, and more are signing as every week passing back. So so far, hopefully, and I believe it will be a success, but and it could only grow. And my dream is about having one international cause associated with one international network of poker player. And, you know, I'm crossing my finger. We're working hard on that. WSOP is working with great, great support. And the team at One Drop that are assigned to this project are very excited. The feedback they get from the players, from the community is great. And I personally get on a daily basis some phone calls and people just wanting to see how they could support in their own way, at their own scale, the One Drop movement. So I don't know where what will be the final result of all that, but it smells and it sounds good so far.
Yeah, the national media has definitely been picking up on this big one for One Drop. Just got a couple of minutes left with you here, Guy, but I mean, is this something that you expect will be an annual thing? Are we going to see this every year at the WSOP? I mean, clearly, you know, poker players, professional poker players, they love giving their time to charity. You mentioned all the big names that are going to be participating, guys like Daniel Negreanu, Johnny Chan, Tom Dwan, Jonathan Duhamel. I mean, it's not very hard to get people to take part in this, it seems.
Well, it is hard for people to... Well, there's two types of people participating to the event. Obviously, there's the business community. It's a little more easy for billionaires and millionaires to sign a personal check of 1 million. It's a little more difficult for professional. Very few of them have the bankroll to sign personal check on that. We know that they organize themselves within their community with staking. I think it's fair play for everybody. Will it come on? Definitely, the WSOP is engaging itself toward one drop. So we know on a yearly basis we'll come with one major event that should raise a lot of money for one drop. Will it be the big one for one drop every year? We don't know yet. I would think that at least every 2 years that will be taking in place, and maybe in every second year there'll be another type of event which will give the opportunity to the rest of the community at a more accessible scale to come and participating at a fundraising event for One Drop. So my thought is maybe every 2 years and creating a new event that will reach more larger scale of the community and with the same ending result in terms of money, but maybe a greater result in terms of awareness and participation.
Well, you know how we are here in Canada, Guy. Every time we see Canadians doing well, we always cheer them on as hard as we can. Fantastic work with One Drop Foundation, Cirque du Soleil as well. All the best with everything that you're doing, Guy. Pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your support.
There's my conversation with Guy Laliberté, the founder of Cirque du Soleil and the chair for One Drop. Definitely a tournament, the big one for One Drop we're going to be talking about a lot about as we get closer to the World Series of Poker and during the WSOP as well. But, you know, I kind of mentioned it during the interview, Chris. He's a big poker player. We see him on all the shows, Poker After Dark, High Stakes Poker. I mean, to him, obviously, the money isn't really a big deal. The guy is worth millions and millions and millions, possibly billions as well. But I mean, how is he as a player?
Well, he's come a long way. When Guy first came to Vegas back in the early days of Cirque in the mid 2000s, and started playing poker in the early to mid 2000s, he played very low limits. I mean, this was a guy that you could find at like at a 1-2 table or a 2-5 table. I mean, guy's a billionaire, and you know, he would play very low stakes poker. He developed his game. He got online, and you know, to be fair and honest, there was a learning curve for him playing very high stakes poker online, where, you know, if you believe what was said, that he played under a variety of names and lost some significant money. Not significant to him, I'm sure, but significant to most people. And there were a few poker pros that were quite happy to bankroll themselves using some of his money. But, you know, he's come a long way with that. And if you've seen any of his appearances in the last couple of years on high stakes poker, Poker After Dark, he seems to have really come a long way in the game, and you know, is capable of making some really good strong plays. Plays a very solid game now. I would say that he'd be, you know, in the category of that businessman turned poker pro, you know, much like Elie Lazarou, who we'll speak to in a bit, who has developed some game and can play a bit.
Well, I know in the one video I was watching on YouTube, it was a high stakes poker game, and it was him and David Benjamin, and they had the $1 million pot, and obviously Guy was so nice, you know, he realized that it was a lot of money for David, and he had him beat in the hand going post flop, and he said, you know what, let's just play for the money that's already in the pot. So he saved him like $400,000 or something ridiculous like that. I mean, clearly he seems like a pretty nice guy. Obviously, he's got all the charitable foundation and all the stuff that he does there, but I mean, it's pretty nice to see him be able to walk away from all that money, because clearly, like we said, money is not an object for him. He just plays for the fun, it seems.
Yeah, and you know what, you got to say that's, I mean, he is an extremely nice guy, a very charitable guy, and the work he does is just undeniably fantastic with charities, but I don't think there's a lot of poker pros that would make that offer the other way around.
Definitely not. It's just a little bit too much money for them to walk away from. It'd be a pretty sweet deal if he could have pulled off that $1 million pot, but not to be. What do you got planned for next week, Chris? You going to be off in some tropical destination and getting away from Muskoka now?
No, I got I've 2 weeks, and then I'm down to Vegas to play a fairly decent little qualifier down there that we'll talk about as we get closer. Another fantastic party poker event. So I'll be in Vegas. And
nice.
That'll give me a chance to scout the land, to lay things out for the World Series of Poker, because I'm, as we spoke about last week, I'm in the process of mapping out my schedule and my time frame and picking my events, and it looks like I'm going to be hitting Vegas a second time in the next month. Will be the early part of June to start playing World Series events.
Well, you have to fill us in when you finally figure out the full schedule, and we'll break it down event by event. Meal by meal, casino by casino.
Loss by loss.
Loss by loss. No, don't think that way. Think positive, Chris. One more segment left to come on The Poker Show. We'll be joined by Ellie Alezra. This is The Poker Show brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. Rob Wong and Chris Tessero, and pleased to be joined on the line now by Ellie Alezra. Thanks for doing this, Ellie.
Thank you for getting me.
Now, Ellie, it's been a while since we chatted with you, but for you, you have such an interesting life as a semi-professional poker player. You obviously are a businessman that by last accounts owns probably 114% of Las Vegas. And you still find time to get out and play poker. Have you been playing some poker lately? I know the games are getting going again.
Yeah, after Black Friday, me and Dory were talking and we said we're probably going to be happy, because me and Dory play live. We play live for years in London. And since all this online, we had limited games. We play once in a while, when the tournament was in town and when special occasion, when NBC heads up or the Ice Tech Poker or Poker After Dark. But now there's no non-stop games. We have, it's not as big as we used to play, 3,000 and 6,000 and 4,000 and 8,000. But we play on a regular basis 1,000 and 2,000 in Bellagio and 3,000 and 6,000 to 4,000 and 8,000 at the Aria. All the mixed games the way that we used to like it.
Well, it was kind of a bad coincidence of timing, because Black Friday came, but a couple of years before that, with the unfortunate passing of Chip Reese, and people may not know this, but Chip Reese was a driving force between being the organizer for a lot of the big money cash games in Bobby's Room and in Vegas.
Absolutely. Chip used to have every player's phone number, and he used to talk to most of us on a regular basis, and he used to just call, and the game used to be right around, running between 8 to 12 hours a day because, the beginning it was me, Chip, and Doyle. We were meeting. That was right when Bellagio opened. But then we have the Chow and Jennifer and Gus and Patrick, Antonio, and Phil, and everybody joining, and Chip, I miss the sound of the gun, Matter of fact, I'm just reading now Gus Hanson's book, and I read what he wrote on Gus, and everything come back to me, thinking about how much we miss him,
Ellie Alezra joining us here on The Poker Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And I'm always curious, Ellie, we watch the TV shows High Stakes Poker, Poker After Dark, and clearly you guys are very competitive when you sit down at the table. But are there times where you just sort of, sit back and you're kind of just enjoying the company? A lot of you guys are really close and you've been playing for so many years. Is it hard sometimes to try to get too competitive and try to beat, maybe one of your friends that's sitting next to you at the table?
No, back to Bobby Baldwin's famous sentence. When we play with, he said all the time, "I like to see the pain on my opponent's face." and this is, he mean it, But I wouldn't say that I want to see the pain. But I'm there, and I'm there to do my job and as a pro to collect the money for my opponent as much as I can. And they do the same thing. And I believe this is the nature of the game. Even though we are very close, we're friends, we invite each other to, to some family occasion and stuff. But at the table, we are very competitive, and when you see us on Ice Techs and and Poker After Dark. It's not the regular bunch, because there's a lot of young kids once in a while joining. But I don't think there's, I mean, the end of the game, I mean, stuff that you guys don't see, you know, we film it for 3 days, you know, 12 hours a day, but then you're getting about 12 episodes on each of those. And the end of it, you know, we sit down, we shake hands, we keep playing Chinese, we're doing... So I don't think that if I would go to the table every day and I would feel sorry for my opponent, then I wouldn't be playing poker. I think this is part of it, that we need to make sure we have as much money or as much chips, you know, if it's tournament.
Well, you mentioned playing with the young guys, Ali, and I know that you've enjoyed some of the skills of the younger generation coming up, but I've been meaning to ask you, have you had a chance to get over to Macau? Because if you haven't, it must be driving you crazy watching and hearing the size of the games that are going on over there and how loose and crazy the action is and how much fun everyone's having with Galfond there and Duan, Patrick and Phil Ivey and everybody's over there playing. Have you had a chance to get there and play?
I haven't. I never been in Macau yet. And matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, we talked. Me and Dor Bronson talked about going down there and check it out. I mean, first of all, I'm sure there's a smaller game, but as it is, the blind is too high for me. You know me. I'm more mixed game specialist. You know, I'm not a no limit hold'em only. And I play with those Macau's boys, you know, three or four Chinese guys at Aussie Million. You know, we had a nice game on the Aussie Cash game. And telling you, yes, I would like. I love to play with those guys that give action, you know, like the Sammy Farha and Tom Duan. And those guys definitely give action. They don't, the Chinese guys gather a lot of money and they give action. So I'm pretty sure in the near future I'll be there. I mean, it's tickling, but you know, when you're sitting, you're thinking about it, you cannot go down there with less than $2 million if you want to sit down on this game and feel comfortable. And as you know, Las Vegas don't do very well, so the economy got us down to playing the 3 and 6, 4 and 8, and 1 and 2,000. It's okay, we'll wait. We'll get back to those games, you know. People that like poker are supposed to be liking it all limit, so... I will wait, but I'm pretty sure I'll be there in Macau.
And that game in Macau, I mean, it's, as you mentioned, the Chinese businessmen who basically make up the bedrock of that game, you have to play. They love it fast, loose, and aggressive, and you have to play it that way or your invite to the game is just not going to exist. They don't want you to play. So that would be a big swingy game. So, you know, you're figuring they're playing, what, 4,000, 8,000 Hong Kong dollars, which is a pretty big game on in and of itself. But you think a bankroll of a couple of million just to get going there?
Yes, please. And you're right. It's 4,000 and 8,000. I think it's like 1,600, 3,200 USA or...
Yeah, very close to that.
Maybe a little less, but it's so huge. But, you know, I can tell you that for sure, though, if you have people that seen the Ice Stakes Poker and the Poker After Dark Cash game, this definitely fitting my style and the Gus Hanson style and the Tom Duan style, playing a lot of hands. You know, we are not people that like to sit down and wait for the ace king or aces or queens or whatever. So it fits your style, but, you know, I don't have to tell you, poker is an up and down. And if you're running good, you can make a lot of money there. And if you don't run good, and I don't care what you do, and you go into the pot with a 9-jack suited, and you fly 2 pair, and this Chinese guy flopped, he has 10 queen, and he don't care to put it all, even though you love to come in to the pot as a 70% favorite, but, you know, and stuff like that, you said to yourself, are you ready to lose $600,000 in one hand, American dollars? And no, I'm not ready yet, so I'll wait to get down there. And don't forget, one more thing that I heard now, all the young, what I called them before, the young specialists of No Limit, you know, I heard about, I don't want to mention name, but a couple of them in there now. So the game don't get easy. The game is getting tougher, and we know the old school people, me and Doyle and Gus and Phil, they master the game. I mean, the old No Limit is not there anymore. Now we got a new No Limit, a new 4-5 bet before the flop No Limit, not playing tight No Limit. So all those guys, all those young kids teaching us a new lessons, and very, very hard to catch up to them, but we're trying.
Yeah, it just seems like the evolution of poker. Elia Lazara joining us here on The Poker Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeCiro. We know the WSOP is coming up soon. Elia, you had your best main event finish last year, 107th. What's your plan for this year's tournament? What games are you expecting to play?
Every year I play around 20 events, and every year I play the 10,000 events, maybe 1-5 or 2-5,000 events. But as I saw the schedule a couple of months ago, there's only, I think, only a couple 10,000 events. The rest of them are lower. So I don't know if they did it because of the economy or whatever. So all the world champions, you know, if it's stud and everything, it's much lower. It's 5,000. So my intention is to play those big game, less of the 1,000 or 1,500 or 2,000 events, because not only that it takes so much out of you, you know, and I'm 52 already, so it's for me to sit down every day for 10, 12 hours. I always take into consideration all the cash games around, you know, and during the World Series, there's a lot of new faces going to be in. Between Ari and Bellagio, it's going to be very busy. So I believe 20 events at least, and hopefully I'll get up one of these days and be like those Frank Casala and this. You know, you wake up with 2-3 bracelets in one year.
Now, Ellie, have you given any thought to the one drop? You got to look at that lineup of, you know, 20 businessmen and you know, 8 or 10 poker pros and think, you know, $1 million buy-in. But that's a pretty juicy game if you think about some of the guys that are playing in that. You know, it's not heavy on big poker skill except for the handful of pros.
No, absolutely, you're right. I mean, first of all, the rumors around when I'm sitting now and playing, I can see a lot of those young kids. They open some sites, and you know, like Daniel Legano, even Jason Marcier, they're selling, you know, dollar per dollar on the site. So a lot of people obviously cannot come up with a down payment of $1 million. But I mean, first of all, I want to take my hat to Guy of doing such a thing. That
great job.
It's gonna be a great job. It's gonna do an history, you know, in the world of poker. It's gonna be one. It's gonna do wonder for those needs, people, the needs of water all over the world. And I mean, a guy like that can come with this kind of idea, and it's only a guy that can be going to the moon, which he did, right? You know, so he's amazing. And I'll tell you, if I would have in my box $10 million, I would buy him.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, I don't have it, and I don't think the lineup will be 20-20. I think it'll be more like I mean, after seeing some of those names, it'll be probably 10 to 12 people that will be, I won't say dead money, but there will be definitely a big dog to win it, versus at least other 20 of the new generation. And the other one will be the Johnny Chen, the Doyle Bronson, the Gus Hanson, and the Patrick and Phil, you know. The younger, the guy that's going to win it will be one of those young generation. That's my gut feeling, you know. One of those, you know, Scott Shiver sitting on the table, and I know he already collected, you know, more than half of the buy-in, so he's going to play. Some of those young kids, those are the ones that's going to really make it in this $1 million. They look again at numbers. They don't look really at the bottom line of the huge tournament, you know.
Yeah, definitely will be interesting to see what happens there. Pleasure speaking with you, Ellie. Thanks for doing this, and good luck at the WSOP.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
There is Ellie Lazara, and Chris, definitely one of the old school guys when it comes to poker.
You know, an old school guy, but a great guy, one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. And, you know, he's got such a great life story. We've spoken to him many, many times. But, you know, Israeli commando, Alaska, like his story just goes on and on. It's like a movie. But what a good guy.
Yeah, it definitely is incredible what he has been able to do in his life. If you ever miss an episode of The Poker Show, you can find us on iTunes or, of course, on Sportsnet590.ca and the podcast section. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris DeCiro and myself at WongSN590. This has been The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.